Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to look at a study from Swanese University about how green tea has the potential to help tackle COVID-19. Good article done at the College of Pharmacy and the Academy of Higher Education. So we'll take a look at what they're suggesting. We have a lot more following that also today. And as I promised, we're going to be starting a new week and some new programming, or reverting back to some of our older programming. It does not mean that I am leaving anything about COVID that is important out of the mix. If you remember about 6 months ago, I said that we had been lied to. That has been proven true. That we had been misled by the media. That's also true. That Anthony Fauci had mismanaged the war on AIDS, something I knew a lot about because for 40 years I've engaged in that battle and saved lives, something he has never done. Isn't it interesting? With all of his hundreds of billions of dollars and over 100 vaccine attempts, not a single vaccine that works for AIDS, and not a single person can he personally say that he has treated and helped. I've got 1,200 who didn't die, got their health back, and 18 reversed their HIV status. Yet he didn't want the world to know that. You can find that out by going to prn.fm or garynall.com and looking at the film, watching it. It's free. In the documentary done by the Society for Independent Investigative Journalism called The Cost of Denial. With the very same blueprint he used then, he is using now with the same deadly consequences, even worse. But if you think it was bad, and it was, all the people were infected, sick, died, and that's terrible, there's more to come. None of it is good. In some cases, be equally as bad. So I'm shifting gears. I will give you COVID updates as I see that new and relevant information is given. There's only so many times I can tell you how to prevent a disease before you either get it, reject it, or don't understand it. And the articles have been written. They're there. You can download them, read them. They're all footnoted, all sourced. Watch the documentaries. It's like anything else. Either a person finds it important enough to engage or they don't, and that's their freedom of choice. But I'm already on to looking behind what could be another motive. Right now, there is no motive. It's just, gee whiz, we ended up with this terrible virus. Not sure where it came from or how it got so lethal. But let's wait till we have a vaccine. Oh, and we have a vaccine. And let's make sure everyone takes it, but it's still experimental. So the results of its safety and efficacy are not yet in, won't be for a year. But let's pretend that they are in because we're saying take your vaccine. We're going to give you some donuts or a baseball ticket. What's it mean when you have to falsely induce people to take a vaccine? Do you hear anyone in the media, any single person, or anyone in the entertainment industry, anyone, telling people to get the vaccine to tell you how many people have actually died, knowing that that could be as little as 1%. Well, it's over 5,000 going to 6,000 just in the United States. It's going towards 15,000 in the European Union. That's 27 countries and a lot of other countries as well. But if that's 1%, even if it's 10%, then you're talking about 40 to 50,000 dead Americans. My question is, what is the magic number before the media finally acknowledge that this is neither safe nor effective? Oh, and there's another 250,000 injured, some severely and some for life. But who's counting when you're only promoting the positive side? There's something more to this, and today we begin that journey. You're going to be hearing from a person today. Her name is, she is Dr. Astrid Stuckelberger. Stuckelberg. She has quite a bio. She's a highly recognized international health policy scientist, directing clinical to epidemiological science to policymakers for over 25 years. She has a PhD in public health. She teaches University of Geneva School of Medicine and teaches applied sciences at the University of Lausanne. She also has received an honorary professorship in Russian Academy of Sciences, a very high honor. She was president of the Geneva International Network on Aging, funded by the World Health Organization. She's published 12 important books. She's published 180 scientific articles and policy papers. She was awarded the UN Secretary General Health Swiss Health Award, and she was nominated as top 100 personalities in Switzerland. I give you this background for a simple reason. She's not a lightweight, and she worked with the World Health Organization. So listen to what she has to say about the pandemic. This is only the beginning. They're coming forward now. Also, we're going to take a look at why are people so susceptible to those in power, especially in the meter of politics, who have given the wrong information. Now, we don't know always why they give the wrong information because we don't know their ultimate motives. We only know the consequences. So we're going to have a clip about social media and the psychology of loneliness and how they exploit people. Then we have a mother. She's not a scientist, but her kid was bringing home lessons from school that really offended her family. And so she went to one of these meetings and she let them know what she thought. Now, you can agree or disagree with what she says, but listen carefully to what she has to say. And also, the latest on ivermectin, we're doing a major investigative report on ivermectin. In our opinion, it could be classified as the new penicillin. It's simply one of the most life-saving and important drugs in all of history. And yet it was denounced and denied by Anthony Fauci, the New York Times, and we're doing a special investigative report on The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine. They will not like what we have to say about them, but it's a pattern of behavior that we have seen repeatedly, how they have been used by special interests. Oh, and you know those 22 scientists, including Nobel Prize winners, who said, don't believe in the conspiracy theories that COVID originated in a lab. It didn't. It came from an animal. Well, now we find out who recruited each and every one of those people and what they all have in common. It should really frighten you. And some of them are already recanting that. So those are just some of the stories we're going to report on today, and environmental issues as well. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. Now, as India continues to be ravaged by the pandemic, a Swansea University academic is investigating how green tea could give rise to a drug capable of tackling COVID-19. They carried out the research with colleagues in India, and they found that it really makes a difference. And, quote, our findings suggest that one of the compounds in green tea could combat the coronavirus behind COVID-19. This was published in a highly respected RSC Advances scientific journal. So there you have it. Professors working together found that something that has been used in India and China and Korea and Japan for hundreds of years, thousands of years, green tea, can help fight this. And by the way, if I have time, I'm going to read you the newest study from published in the Peer Review Journal showing that they reviewed thousands and thousands of substances to see which natural substances could have antiviral properties. They narrowed it down to 20 that had specific effects against COVID. And all of those have been mentioned on this program. So why publish it now in a peer-reviewed journal saying, hey, we have something you can take preventatively, prophylactically, but also if you get sick, at the first signs, take this. Not a word. And yet the peer-reviewed journal supports it. From Ankara Research Hospital in Turkey, a study on the high prevalence of vitamin D deficiency in breast cancer patients. So according to news reporting from Ankara, quote, we aim to reveal vitamin D levels in women with breast cancer. 561 women with primary breast cancer were included in the study. And what they found was that these women who had breast cancer had a substantial vitamin D deficiency. And this was published in a major peer-reviewed journal. So wouldn't it make sense then to suggest that women take adequate amounts of vitamin D3 every day? Yes, it would. So you should be taking it. Now, from RSSI University of Medicine Health Sciences in Ireland, An article published in Translational Psychiatry shows that low levels of the omega-3 fatty acids were associated with a higher risk of psychosis. New research has found that adolescents with higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids in their blood were less likely to develop psychotic disorders in early adulthood, suggesting it may help be a preventative of reducing risk of psychosis, something natural, non-toxic. They reviewed 3,800 individuals in the Bristol's Children study, and young people from 17 to 24 who had generalized anxiety disorder. Something as simple as one nutrient, the omega-6 fatty acids, and that wouldn't be the first nutrients that, and the omega-3 fatty acids. First, it turns off inflammation, including reduces inflammation in the brain and the heart and the arteries. That wouldn't have been the first thing I would have given to someone who has ADHD or psychosis, but hey, they got good results, so good for them. From the Blount Memorial Weight Management Center comes a study about foods that can help protect against sun damage. We're beginning this summer, and the hope is you'll get more outdoor time. My hope is you'll take some coconut oil and on the skin and vitamin C to help trap free radicals and quercetin to help from burning. But no matter what, don't get excessive sun, but get a good hour of sun. That'll give you a lot of vitamin D3, and the sun is really healthy. So we all need sun exposure. In fact, most experts end up recommending sunscreens year-round. I do not. I disagree with what's going on with all the sunscreens. And what we found instead, and this is a study, quote, a diet rich in certain foods actually help protect your skin from harmful ultraviolet rays. They in no way should serve as a replacement for traditional sunscreen. I disagree with that. But that's, you know, at least you know that there's some foods that can make a difference. Tomatoes, carrots. Well, what do tomatoes and carrots have? Well, lycopene and also carotenoids. Pomegranates also protect us. So simple fruits and vegetables. Avocado contain healthy oils to keep your skin protected. So have your avocado on your sandwich or in a salad. And of course, these are all citrus foods that contain vitamin C. And by the way, why I suggest you juice the skin of organic citrus is because they're essential oils called limonene, L-I-M-O-N-E-N-E, and that also has anti-cancer properties and protects as well. And then, of course, there's green tea that has protection as well. Green tea is very high in antioxidants, which can help guard against ultraviolet radiation. It also promotes DNA repair and has anti-inflammatory compounds that can help for repair as well. So the omega-3 fatty acids are important in addition to everything else. Now, from Mount Sinai Hospital, an article published in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, seaweed could potentially help fight food allergies. Now, seaweed has long been a staple food in many Asian countries and has recently caught on as a, well, as something used in the United States. Seaweed salads are very, very tasty, delicious salads, and you can use them in a soup or in dishes. And food allergies are a major global health issue. They're either fixed or cyclic. And I find that a lot of people benefit when they have more of the polysaccharides, which are anti-asthmatic and anti-allergy, and seaweeds have those. So just one more way. There are all kinds of seaweeds that are important. All right? And finally, from St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, barley lowers not one but two types of bad cholesterol. So eating barley, you can have a mushroom barley soup. You can have barley as a whole grain. Get the peeled barley. Contains significant levels of two types of nutrients that can help with the bad cholesterols. This was published in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. There are 14 studies, by the way, on clinical trials conducted in 7 countries, including Canada, showing the power of barley, bringing down the bad cholesterol. So that's good. Barley is good, and it's good as a hot cereal in the morning as well. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go to this doctor who I mentioned at the top of the program. She is a highly respected scientist, and I need you to know that she is one of those people that is set at the policy-making table all over. All right? Oh, and by the way, there's new evidence that a virologist told Fauci SARS-2, quote, potentially engineered, and now his account is no longer there. So we have more evidence when more of these are read, the emails. It says a lot, and it says a lot about his credibility. So when we come back, you're going to be hearing Dr. Astrid, A-S-T-R-I-D, Stuckelberger. Please stay with us.
Is organized internationally in a systemic way. This director general has absolutely no idea about pandemic. And the problem is he's not taking with him the specialists that I know on SARS-CoV-1. Why didn't he bring back Gro Harlem Brundtland and Margaret Chan, 2 brilliant doctors, women, to come and manage the pandemic with him? Where are they? You know, where is their voice? WHO has a communication office and, of course, you know, a press conference is regular. Because of the lockdown, we see a lot online, live. Normally, when you do that, there is called a shock room, a room of special operation I always visit with students, where they look at the whole world, what is the data everywhere, and they communicate. What I see now is that they don't communicate. They are dictating a will of not communicating. And it seems, it's not it seems, they are not taking the people, specialists that I know. They are doing live presentation, very general, generalizing, changing words, changing definitions, not giving precise data, not giving precise science. And what is pretty, it's very shocking, is that all the medias in the world say the same thing, the same words, in the shops, in the airports, in the newspapers, and they are paying the media for producing what they want. It is in the law of COVID-19. So how can you have a debate? And then they just build a task force of experts. The task force in Switzerland is full of conflict of interest. I take one after the other of my colleagues at University of Geneva in the Institute Tropical Institute of Basel. Professor Tanner, he has been funded by Bill Gates and Melinda Foundation immensely. The University of Geneva also, the University of Lausanne also. So the task force and the scientists that are built to lead this pseudo-pandemic are actually helping the rhetoric of the press, the way the press wants, the way the government wants. And we don't have a debate. We have censorship. Censorship is the first, you know, sign of a dictatorship. Freedom of expression is the liberty that you can see when you are free to talk. And this time, we are in a science fiction, big time. The politicization of a new science, fake science. And it is pretty dramatic because it has consequences on people, people's life, people's economy. People can be saved and they censor doctors, they censor treatments that work. They go to pharmacies and they take the whole stock of ivermectin that works really well. They go and stop scientific people from doing good data collection, saying it is not valid. And they put their own data that's completely in conflict of interest. So WHO, with the media, the main media, they have very well analyzed the system. And they're head of the International Telecommunication Agency. So you can put all this together and they have the whole system in their hands. And I say they, it's above Guterres. Bill Gates is part of Gavi. But beyond this, Gavi is occupied by a board who are in the system and are promoting this. And above Gavi, we know that the Rockefeller Foundation has been a big part of founding global health and well-being. And Everybody knows it, so I can say it, but there are many other agencies that and people that we have to investigate. And what is absolutely shocking as a Swiss citizen is that Gavi, the Global Alliance Vaccine Initiative, has total immunity in their action, in their decision, and in what they're doing. This means they have higher immunity than member states that are in the UN, consulates, ambassadors. They can do any crime they want. Nobody can come and look into their office, in the cupboards, in their computer, and they don't pay taxes. And if you have a diplomatic pass, what happens is you have diplomatic immunity in your luggage, in what you transport, in what you buy, sell. And as you know, we have a secret bank in Switzerland, so it's very easy also, you know, to do a lot of financial setup. So that's the first thing, is that Gavi is a big, big player, signed with the Swiss government, with the FDA of Switzerland, Swissmedic. They are deciding for our health system and your vaccination campaign. And I suspect they have done this with every country in the world. What I found is that WHO, Gavi, and the Swiss government have signed agreements on managing the pandemic, and not only about the immunity. What I also found is that Gavi has made partnership with bilateral agencies of the United Nations for, like World Bank, probably others. World Bank is very important because they created something called the IFFM, the International Financial Facility for Immunization. And this mechanism, this is really incredible. This mechanism is a mechanism that helps Gavi to get funds and donors. And those donors are member states. So we can find, like, Italy has given millions to Gavi through this mechanism. They are having a stock bond market. They have made a financial system that so each time the country gives our taxes to the IFFM, they give it, in fact, to Gavi to apply his immunization program and global plan of vaccine, that you can find the plan on WHO 2016. So the public-private partnership of Gavi and WHO goes beyond that. It goes with multinationals, and it is also a creation of organs that suddenly act with finance. So I just want to tell you a few things. So the World Bank has signed with Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccine Initiative, Bill Gates, a partnership for the International Finance Facility to Immunization, IFFIM. And this IFFIM is actually financing something called CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation. And just that you know, this is leading the research and science of preparation and is at the basis of the program COVAX, who is chaired by Singapore and Switzerland. So WHO, Gavi, and CEPI, which is actually the governments of the world, your government, is paying for leading the COVAX campaign in the world. It's getting clearer and clearer to me. I, as a scientist, I have to build hypotheses. But there are facts. So we have to test the hypothesis and investigate. What is clear is that there is a big international, multinational, maybe very small, of people with huge amounts of money, probably those who produce the money in private reserve banks. As you know, many of the banks are private and not public, and they don't belong to the government. In the U.S., I think it's like that. Switzerland also. So the agenda of this big coalition, families, and Bill Gates is part of this, are not hiding what they want to do. If you look at what Bill Gates said in 2015 in a TED Talk, he talked of the virus, the terrible virus, the pandemic, and he talked of depopulation. He said there are too many people on Earth. We have to depopulate. And so that's one agenda, definitely. But it's not new. If you remember, those families or those a lot of people have already started in the Second World War with eugenics. They wanted the Aryan race, they wanted the best, that was their excuse for depopulating. And it is even before. The other wars, so this is not new. What is new is that we see it clearly today, that they are trying to lock down the liberties of people. The freedom of people is really disturbing them. They want to annihilate any thinking and emotion and cognition. And by the way, this swab in the nose is unprecedented because you can take the saliva and test the DNA. So going down there is with an intention. And one of the intention is that you have the most...
Okay, it goes on for another 15 minutes. But now we're starting to see this. We're seeing people break rank. These are not alternative scientists or doctors. These are mainstream Orthodox scientists and doctors. And there are over 100,000 of them now. And they're coming up and telling us the truth. Well, by the way, here's something to think about. A lot of what we do in the United States is we base what we believe upon who we trust sharing the information. This is the latest. Supreme Court orders Johnson & Johnson to pay $2.1 billion in baby powder lawsuit. This is from Big Pharma. It goes on and it says, we've been reporting on this issue for years, pointing out the cover-up and deceptive practices of Johnson & Johnson. Here's an article. For 40 years, Johnson & Johnson hid baby powder ovarian cancer connection. And it goes on to talk about all the different things they've done in their career, just to name a few. In 1995, $7.5 million fine for destroying documents to cover up an investigation into wrongful marketing of its Retin-A acne cream to remove wrinkles. 1996, an undisclosed settlement on false claims over condom protection claims to protect against HIV and other STDs. 2001, paid out $860 million in a class action lawsuit for misleading customers about prematurely discarding its First Day AccuVue soft contact lens. 2010, $81 million settlement for misbranding its anti-epileptic drug. 2011, several Johnson & Johnson baby products were discovered to contain carcinogenic ingredients. 2013, the U.S. Justice Department charged the company $2.2 billion in criminal fines for marketing its autism and antipsychotic drug, Risperdal, for unapproved uses. And it goes on. So here's my question. If a company, and this is all of the companies currently out there that I know of, Merck and Pfizer, if they have a long and sordid history of misbranding, mislabeling, knowing things were toxic, like Merck knew that Vioxx was toxic, could increase heart attacks and strokes. But now that they're working on COVID, and we, the public, are giving them money, we give them billions of dollars to develop a vaccine or a drug, suddenly everything they've ever done that was something that would say, don't trust these people, they have a long history of lying and deceiving, all for profit. Why then are we believing them today? An example. Fauci was talking under oath about how the National Institute of Health and his center never, ever funded gain-of-function research. Well, that's not an outlier. There's so many documents proving that. But then they talked about the $600,000, and then it was $3 million, then $3.3 million, and $6 million over a period of time given to the Wuhan lab and others to do gain-of-function research. Here's the latest. Quote, government and Pentagon funneled $162 million to Echo Health Alliance, the group that funded coronavirus research in Wuhan. And also the Pentagon funneled $39 million to Echo Health, a group led by controversial researcher Dr. Peter Daszak, and who, by the way, was behind selecting the people to write the article in The Lancet over a year ago, that then everyone else in the scientific community says, oh, it's all conspiracy theory if you don't go along with the official version. And that's what the media did, went along with the official version. Peter Daszak. And who was the one who, we have emails between Peter Daszak and other officials, and including Anthony Fauci. So it wasn't a small amount of money. We're talking about $162 million went to one group, and he was one of the biggest sponsors of gain-of-function research. He even had bragged about it in one of the videos. Also, this is from media and big tech, and this is from report, quote, reporters say Wuhan lab leak theory was disregarded because it came from GOP. A number of reporters from mainstream media outlets have recently admitted that the Wuhan lab leak theory was originally dismissed because it came from Republicans. Wow. So as long as something can be weaponized and benefited to a group, either Democrats or Republicans, then the truth is really irrelevant. So for 4 years, the media, and especially a lot of legislators, said the Russians affected the outcome of the election 2016. Those were all lies. Now, I do not support Donald Trump. I don't like anything about Trump or his family. But I like less people actively engaged in a systematic campaign to lie. And they did. And now we know why. And this is Thomas Frank in an opinion piece in The Guardian. Quote, if the Wuhan lab leak hypothesis is true, expect a political earthquake. The potential consequences of the origin of the virus are shattering if they can be proved. Well, they can be proved, and now people are coming forward to prove it. Independent scientists who've done the complete sequencing have the evidence. Oh, and by the way, the information that was just given was first reported in by the person who was just on the doctor. I went back and found the Rockefeller University 2004 report from the president of the university and a leading scientist that everything in the future was going to be based upon technology solving all of our problems, technology and business. And what are we doing now? Technology and business. And by the way, this is from John Hopkins professor. Half of Americans have natural immunity. Dismissing it is, quote, the biggest failure of medical leadership. A professor with Johns Hopkins School of Medicine has said that there is a general dismissal of the fact that more than half of all Americans have developed natural immunity to the coronavirus and that it can constitute, quote, one of the biggest failures of our current medical leadership. Dr. Marty Makary made the comments during a recent interview noting, quote, natural immunity works. Of course it does. That's why chickenpox and measles, once you have it, you're immune for life. But here's where you start seeing real hidden agendas. Knowing that most people today have come into contact with the virus, some have symptoms, some have little, some have major, some are hospitalized, some die. But once you've come into contact, you have natural immunity. And yet, none of that counts. There's millions, over 130 million people by our count, who have medical conditions that would preclude them from getting the vaccine. Yet, and these are autoimmune conditions, people with cancer, pregnant women, etc. And yet, not a single one of these people have been given a pass by Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, or anyone else in power. Everybody's got to be vaccinated. Why? It goes against science. It goes against clinical experience. It goes against public health. If you're already vaccinated, you're vaccinated. You're protected. You see, the agenda is not about saving lives. There's something else afoot here. Oh, and by the way, Luc Montagnier, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering HIV virus, did not say vaccine would kill people in 2 years. That's not what he said. So that was one of those fake stories put up there. Who put it up? We don't know. But there's a lot of misinformation up there. Oh, and by the way, since they want a new COVID chairperson, they selected one. The 9/11 director is the one who's going to be running that commission. I do not like anything about the 9/11 censorship, obfuscation, and false information. But keep it in the House, and that's what they're doing. Now, if you want to know another way they're lying to you, to make sure that you were positive, they amplified the PCR test upwards of 45 times, guaranteeing that everybody's going to be positive. But now that you're vaccinated, I have right in front of me the CDC's own report And on one line it says, quote, respiratory specimen for SARS-2 sequencing. And it says clinical specimens for sequencing should have a PCR value of 28. Ah, think for a moment. What this means is that to make sure everybody was a case and a patient and therefore terrified, make a high sequencing of 45. But after they've been vaccinated to show that the vaccine works, bring it down to 28. Where no one's going to be positive. Go to the CDC's own website. It's right there. We have a copy of it. All right? So everything that they can do to play you, they're doing. So that's just the latest update on those areas. I said I would keep you up to date on what is important. And by the way, this is also important. This comes from Great Game India, one of the best sites in the world. Quote, how top British scientists covered up COVID-19 bioweapons research to peddle natural origin theory, quote, and this is from the site. It says, two of the top scientists leading Britain's response to the COVID-19 pandemic colluded with Anthony Fauci in a cover-up of the COVID-19 bioweapons research, also known as gain-of-function experiments, to peddle natural origin theory of the coronavirus. Sir Jeremy Farah, director of Wellcome Trust, by the way, those are the people making AZT, and Sir Patrick Vallance, former president of research and development at pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline and chief scientific advisor to the British government since March 2018, both feature in the Fauci files, an explosive batch of emails released under Freedom of Information Legislation in America. The Wellcome Trust is an immensely wealthy foundation which distributes $1 billion annually for global health research. It was formed in 1936 after the death of Sir Henry Wellcome, who founded the company that went on to become GlaxoSmithKline. And then it goes on to talk about what they found. So the house of cards is imploding. Just want to share that with you. Now, we're going to, while time permits, we're going to go to our next call and or our next video, and then you can call in with your thoughts. Now, mind you, you can agree or disagree with any specific thing this person says, but I told you some time ago, you cannot take a woke culture that is demanding everything be changed instantaneously or be shamed and canceled. You can't say mother, you can't say father, you can't say grandmother, grandfather. You can't say any of this stuff. You can't even hold someone's hand if it's your husband or wife until you first get permission. You can't wipe your baby's butt until you get the baby's permission. This is how insane these people are. And I said when the great majority of Americans finally speak, they're going to be speaking very loudly, and they're going to put everyone on notice. You've pushed us too far, and then they're going to push back. So for the people who thought they controlled the day and everything that comes with it and realigning all of our curriculums, rewriting our history, and engaging in shame to professors who they don't like something about the professor, therefore all professors are open prey, here's a woman, just a mother, who's fighting in the Carmel, New York, school board meeting. Hear what she has to say.
Good evening. My name is Tatiana Ibrahim, and I'm here for the first time. I'm here tonight not only as a community member, but as a parent in this district. Recently, you sent out a survey wanting to know why parents were not voting yes for this budget. So my situation, my vote for no is a little different. I think the Board of Education and those sitting on the panels are thieves. I think they're liars and have committed treason against our children. My message to this district and the members of the Board of Ed, stop indoctrinating our children. Stop teaching our children to hate the police. Stop teaching our children that if they don't agree with the LGBT community, that they're homophobic. You have no idea each child's life. You don't know what their family lifestyle consists of. You don't know the makeup of their life. You have children like mine who is Muslim, and I'm Christian, and everyone would think they would never believe that of her. right? Because the way she looks, or according to Miss Cyrus, she's too pasty white.
Ma'am, excuse me. I'm up here.
Since when, for all of us who grew up liberal, since when, for all of us who fought for human rights, civil rights, Indian rights, women's rights, animal rights, since when is it now acceptable to promulgate the idea that your genes that you were born with, you had no control over, that determines who you are and how you should be judged, and your pecking order now in a new society? And if you think it's bad, wait till you see what they have planned for you coming up with the new economic reset. They're playing all of the people. They're behind all of this. Just people are not paying attention to where this is going and who's behind it and who benefits when we start fighting each other, when people hate each other, when we lose respect for the sanctity of life, anyone's life. But we've been there for some time. That's why I continue to remind you that until you can protest, until you can march, until you can demonstrate to save the lives of young children in Yemen who are dying because of the United States and because of both Republican and Democratic leadership in the House, the White House, in Congress, and the media, because that's our war. Saudi Arabia created it, but we're the one funding it, using intelligence and the weapons that are killing people, children. How many children? At least 200,000 dead. Does that get anyone's attention? Evidently not. One child in America that's caught in the sewer and can't get out, we hold our breath till it's out. Say thank for that happening. 200 children dead in another country? No. Doesn't get anyone's attention. That's on us, not the media, not the policymakers, not the military-industrial complex. That's on the average person. I'm finishing a documentary on this very topic right now. I've been working on it for about 2 years. And one of the scenes in it you'll see is, you'll see me talking with a person in Las Vegas, once a very booming and beautiful development area, thousands of homes. And across the street is someone who has the marshals there and their homes being repossessed. Do you know those people? Oh, yeah. We've been friends for 25 years. Kids went to school together, vacation together, etc. I said, have you gone over to ask, could you help them? They have no place to go. They're out there crying on the lawn. The kids are crying. Everyone's crying. No. So you're looking through the window blind at someone that you called a friend that you shared positive and remarkable moments with, but you're not a friend when they're in a crisis. What kind of friendship is that? That's a hard question. No, my question's an honest question, friend. Your response by letting someone that you say is a friend and you didn't go over and say, do you need a place, you know, for someone to stay? We can fix up a garage and do something to help you. And that look up and down the street. No one is helping anyone except family members. That's it. It's called couch surfing. So that's on the American public, which I'm not really happy about right now, of where they're at on their spiritual journey or lack of being on that journey. Why? How did we get here? How did we get here? What have we become when we allow people to cause us to be in such conflict and judgment against each other? All right? So that's where we're at. Let's go out of the show today listening to some incredibly important insight. And I'm going to be having these on a regular basis to give us some deeper insight into the human condition. Because if we don't take a deeper dive into our own lives to resolve our conflicts, to respect all life, to respect the dignity of all people, to try to help people who are down, reach out our hand to bring them back up, then shame on us. Now to that clip.
Three, wrote Norman Cousins, is an endeavor to shatter his loneliness. In today's world, with all the technologies built to connect us, loneliness, one would think, would be easily shattered. But the more we get drawn into the virtual worlds of social media, the worse we tend to feel. To account for this, it is suggested that the medium is the problem. We have become over-reliant on connecting through our devices at the expense of more traditional ways of social interaction. But while there is likely some truth to this assertion, In this video, we are going to put forth the argument that it is an inner emptiness, or the lack of a well-defined and effectual sense of self, that is the root cause of the loneliness experienced by so many in our day. One sense of self can be seen as existing on a spectrum. On the one side of the spectrum are those with a strong sense of self. Such people feel they have a place in the world. They know what they want with their lives, and they take the necessary actions to move in the direction of their goals. On the other side of the spectrum are those with a weak sense of self. These are the empty men and women. Such individuals lack a clear conception of what they want with their life. They have no long-term goals around which to structure their days, and so they feel powerless to positively influence their situation. These people tend to drift through life in a passive manner. They follow the path of least resistance and are often crippled by existential doubts. This problem of emptiness, which now afflicts so many in the West, is a symptom of a society in a period of flux, for one's selfhood, or lack thereof, is influenced by the social structures of one's day. In the West, many of the institutions which in the past helped people find their place in the world have fallen to the wayside. The decline of Christianity, for example, has left the West lacking a religious or cultural myth to which people can turn to in order to find a place in this world and a meaning to their life. The growth of the state has also been a force which has contributed to this pathology of emptiness, for the rise of the state has led to the destruction of smaller communities and the degradation of the family unit, which for millennia have been integral forces in the development of one's selfhood. But what has really exacerbated this problem for the younger generations are unfavorable economic conditions. For even if one struggled to find a deeper meaning to their life in the mid to late 20th century, at least one could fall back on the so-called American dream. And by establishing a stable career, purchasing a home, and raising a family, one could develop a more or less adequate sense of self. But for the most part, this dream is dead, and the confluence of all these forces has created a society full of hollow men and women. A society inflicted by a pathology of emptiness is also a society full of anxiety-ridden individuals. For if we feel ourselves to be powerless to exert control over our life, and uncertain of our ability to face up to the challenges of our environment, then anxiety is a natural response. And for the hollow man, this anxiety is most strongly felt during periods of solitude. If we have no other people around to lean on or to distract us, then our thoughts turn inward, and this leads the hollow among us to become aware of their inner void. Therefore, unlike an individual with a strong and individuated sense of self, for whom periods of solitude can be rejuvenating, solitude for the hollow man is experienced as a painful loneliness and something he must flee from. In generations past, the hollow man would turn to the comfort and security of friends and family or take part in social events to avoid the anxiety that was triggered in times of solitude. But in the present day, we don't even need to leave the comfort of our home to find the social connections necessary to block out awareness of our emptiness. Instead, we merely need to turn to the comforting glow of our phones and immerse ourselves in the virtual worlds of social media. We can even go as far as to construct a pseudo-self to mask over our empty nature. By selectively posting bits of information about our life online, we can pretend to be someone we are not and feed off the social validation offered by the others who participate in this game. This defensive mechanism, used by the hollow man or woman, whereby they flee to the comfort of the crowd to avoid the anxiety triggered in times of solitude, is also utilized by pre-psychotic individuals in the attempt to avoid a psychotic break. In his book Interpretation of Schizophrenia, Silvano Arietti describes how this process unfolds.
We're going to go right back to it. I just want to say thank you for all of our WBAI audience. You're going to go now to your news, and everyone else will stay tuned at PRN.FM. We're going to take this up to the end of the hour. Very, very important thoughts coming at you.
In some cases, writes Arietti, schizophrenia starts with a period of confusion, excitement, and agitation. The patient seems to be eager to make contacts, to reach all the people he knows, to reconnect himself with what seems to be an escaping world. He searches for something that he cannot find. What the schizophrenic is searching for is also what the hollow man lacks, a secure sense of self. In its extreme form, writes the psychologist Rollo May, this fear of losing oneself is the fear of psychosis. The outward turn to the security of the social world usually fails to protect one on the cusp of a psychotic break. And so too does the outward turn to the world of social media ultimately fail to protect the hollow man from his anxiety and loneliness. This solution is like placing a band-aid on a gunshot wound, as the social validation that is gained through social media use is as empty as the people who grant it. For as Rollo May noted in his book Man's Search for Himself, the hollow among us are bound to become more lonely no matter how much they lean together, for hollow people do not have a base from which to learn to love. But what makes this defense against emptiness particularly harmful is that it prevents people from taking the necessary steps to address their lack of a self. The human being, wrote May, cannot live in a condition of emptiness for very long. If he is not growing towards something, he does not merely stagnate. The pent-up potentialities turn into morbidity and despair, and eventually into destructive activities. The true antidote to an inner emptiness is to discover what we truly want with our life and to take the actions necessary to bring that self and life into existence. To accomplish this, we must be willing to face up to our loneliness and the anxiety which accompanies it. For loneliness, as Edward Edinger put it in his book Ego and the Archetype, is a precursor to the positive experience of aloneness. And it is in periods of aloneness that we can begin to learn who we are and what we want with our life. This process is epitomized by the archetype of the hero's journey, or as Joseph Campbell explains, the call is to leave a certain social situation, move into your own loneliness and find the jewel, the center that's impossible to find when you're socially engaged. This is the departure when the hero feels something has been lost and goes to find it. The first step, detachment or withdrawal, consists in a radical transfer of emphasis from the external to the internal world, a retreat from the desperations of the wasteland to the peace of the everlasting realm that is within. But this realm, as we know from psychoanalysis, is precisely the infantile unconscious. It is the realm that we enter in sleep. We carry it within ourselves forever. All the life potentialities that we never manage to bring to adult realization, those other portions of ourself, are there. For such golden seeds do not die. Facing up to our aloneness and cultivating the golden seeds of our being is no easy task, as it requires that we take the bold step of diminishing our need for social validation. For to develop a strong sense of self, we must distinguish ourselves psychologically from our peers. Each of us is unique. We have different innate talents, likes and dislikes. And so as we strengthen our sense of self, it is inevitable that we will become less like those around us. But we must not think that this process will turn us into outsiders who reject the social world. Rather, those who cultivate a strong sense of self only improve their social skills and enrich their relationships. For a person who possesses the inner strength associated with a well-defined self will not be held back in their social interactions by anxiety or the need for validation. Instead, a strong sense of self will free us to behave with spontaneity, which is one of the most attractive of human characteristics. And as the etymology of the word implies, acting spontaneously means acting in accordance with our will, something that is only possible after we have developed a strong sense of self. If we dare to take this journey, not everyone will approve, and some of the people who we considered friends may even treat us with disdain. For to see a man move beyond the chains of his emptiness only makes the hollow man more aware of his barren nature. Or as Nietzsche wrote in Thus Spoke Zarathustra, "Injustice and filth they throw after the lonely one. But, my brother, if you would be a star, you must not shine less for them because of that. And beware of the good and the just. They like to crucify those who invent their own virtue for themselves. They hate the lonely one."
Well said. People I grew up with, Rollo May, reading him, Man's Search for Himself. We will have more. I'm going back to Montaigne, Eurydicles. I'm going to be presenting information from people, wise men and women, who have lived throughout time, and we are the benefactors, if we choose to, of their insights. Hoping you all have a nice day. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for Utrecht's Lead.